Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello. Welcome along to Tech Talk then. Robin Christofferson, how are you this week, sir?
Really well. Really well, thanks.
Good. Well, we have got plenty to be talking about this week. Do you know, it is a week full of news, and some of it is what I would say good news in a way. Some of it is excellent news, and some of it is downright strange news. Yes, that's pretty much the way I would summarise it. And to be honest, that could be any week, especially around the topic of Brexit. But as you know, Robin, we're not talking about Brexit on the show. This is a Brexit-free zone.
Good.
You know, the way you said that just says it all. It's like, good, I've had enough, can't take anymore.
Just unwind the last 2 years, please.
Oh, I know, please. And, you know, the thing is, they keep saying that when this is all sorted out, we've got another 2 years of this to go. You know, they've got to sort out the, oh, it's like, I've had enough, give it up. Anyway, let's get into the topics this week. We're going to be talking about smart energy meters. Now, a lot of people may know that there is a big push on at the moment to make all of us more aware of the energy that we're consuming. But, of course, the issue for us as blind people is getting that information available to us in an accessible format. Good news, because there is a new product that's out and it's coming in summer, which you will be able to get from your energy supplier. We're going to be hearing about that, that will make energy and understanding the energy consumption that you make more accessible to you. So that's coming up. Also, Robin is telling us all about his love of emojis, aren't you?
Yes, I'm pulling a face here. It's an excited face.
Not a poo face, is it?
Smiling.
So we're going to talk about that because it's an app that you've been wanting to tell us about. I'm looking forward to hearing about it. And as well as that, we're going to go through all your news and emails as well. Lots of you sending in emails. It's all to come on this week's Tech Talk. So let's get into it then, shall we? And we'll start with accessible home monitors for smart meters. Now, this might sound like a bit of a dry topic, right? But I promise you it's not, because I don't know if you've got one of these yet, Robin, but, and I certainly haven't yet.
No.
But a lot of the companies are now starting to offer people these in-home energy meters that you can sort of see. Now, what they do is you sort of plug them in and they are sitting there monitoring and showing you essentially what your usage is. So when you turn the kettle on, you know, the light will come on and tell you, oh, look, you're using the kettle and it's burning all this amount of electricity. The idea being you've got an idea of how much you're spending and where you're spending it. I think the premise of this is actually pretty good, don't you?
Mm. Yeah, more information is a good thing, definitely.
Yeah. But of course, it has to be accessible. And that's the other thing. So for us, the challenge is how do we get that information to be accessible? Because ultimately, it's a very visual thing, this little device that comes. My mum's got one, and I was having a look at it. It's trying to see what it, I mean, I can't really read anything on it, which is why I need the accessible one. But, you know, I was looking at trying to figure out, right, how does this work? Because it kind of like there's a little needle that kind of goes up and down dependent on the amount of usage. And I'm thinking, how's that going to all be turned into audio for us? Can it be turned into audio? Will it ever happen? Now, this is something we've been actually asked a lot about on the show. It's something that I know comes up as a topic a lot. Thankfully, we have the answer, and it is now RNIB approved, RNIB certified, which is brilliant. And that is a smart, it's not a smart meter, but it's an accessible in-home monitor which will connect to your energy device, which is, you know, they do all that gubbins in the box in the cupboard that no one ever goes in. And they have a little monitor that sits next to that, and that little monitor is what's being made accessible. So it's brilliant news. Now, I'm not going to tell you any more about it. I'm going to let the guy who actually created it tell you more about it, because I got a chance to speak to him at TechShare Pro last year. His name is Sam Sykes, and he is here to tell us all about the new smart meter, which will be available in summer.
My role within Geo is to design the physical and the user interfaces for our in-home displays that come as part of a smart meter package. So you have the smart meter that's installed in the cupboard or wherever it might be, and then there is a display. And so I design the user interfaces and the physical nature of that display within the business.
So the smart meters that we're hearing about, the ones that will be available to any customer who wants them, and we're hearing it right now, it's actually you that designs that.
Indeed. I mean, we work with the utilities. Some utilities have particular requirements on how they might want their display to look, or the words, terminology that they might use. But very much we are trying to make energy visible. I know that sounds a little bit bizarre, but you've got your meter. You don't know when you use that energy. You don't know how much it's cost. All you do is you know the number is increasing. So what the in-home display does is articulate that in a particular way. There are a set of requirements set out by the government. So the display has to be able to show real-time energy, show whether you are using low, medium, or a high amount of energy. And so we've taken those requirements and turned them into an interface that we believe is very usable.
Okay, so here it is. Talk me through it.
Okay, so actually... Did I touch it? You can hear it talking. It's in a demo. I'll just ask it to be quiet.
You said before we started that there's a shut-up button.
Well, there is, yes, indeed. There's a button that stops it talking, because sometimes it can be giving you quite a lot of information. And if you don't need all of that information, we give you the important bit up front. You can actually mute it. So what we're looking at here is an accessible version of our in-home display. The reason I say... highlight it as being accessible is there are a generation of displays that are less accessible. They don't speak to you. Still have large fonts, high contrast, but this in particular speaks to you. So your utility will give you a smart meter and a smart meter display. You have the choice as a consumer to ask for an accessible display. And this is the display that you will be given.
So I can't see a display. So the talking aspect really interests me.
And that's the really important bit, actually, is we need to tell you what a display would normally be showing somebody who can see.
Oh. Current hourly rate of 49 pence.
So this is in demo mode, and it's just gone and moved from a low use to a medium use. So it's just gone and spoken and said, by the way, your energy consumption has gone up. It only does that when you change between low, medium, and high. If you want to find out how much energy you're using, you can just go up to the display and press the top button, and you'll hear it starting to speak through all of the items in priority that are on the screen.
Home, three items. One, energy now. Current electricity usage is high. Red, £1.27 per hour. Recent gas usage is medium, 5 pence per hour. Press the OK button to change to kilowatts. New message received. There is a new message from your energy supplier in your inbox.
We might ask it to be quiet. Okay.
That's brilliant. So it's giving you a lot of information there, which is the information, as you say, that is visibly available
indeed,
on screen.
Indeed. And actually, this is where it's been brilliant working with the RNIB. I'll be honest, you know, those of us who can see think, oh, it can't be that difficult to make a display that talks. Well, actually, we were just naive. You know, we did some pretty good attempts, but actually working with the RNIB, we start to appreciate things like speed of speech. We thought it was going far too fast, but apparently it's going far too slow. The importance of information. And also, working with Sabina, it was very important that anything that was visible on the display should be described or spoken about. So we've worked, it's taken a year of going through this and doing some user testing to actually understand what is the best way to make the display work. And one of the challenges we have is this is not an internet-connected display. So it has to know about everything it's got to say when it goes into the consumer's home.
So there you go, that's Sam Sykes talking there about the smart meter. I mean, that sounds pretty good, Robin. I mean, you know, okay, it seems in some ways like we're on day one of this, but it's pretty good. I mean, it's telling you what you need to know, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm intrigued that it doesn't have an internet connection. I thought these smart meters did have, that's the whole point, so that they wouldn't have to have a chap coming and knocking on your door every month or so. But if they haven't got an internet connection, then how can you have a message? It said one notification from your energy supplier. So not sure about that. I'm intrigued, definitely. I want to get my hands on them. So are these free from your supplier?
Yes, do you know, that's my favourite price.
Take two.
Yeah, I love free. And yeah, they are free. So essentially, these are coming to anybody really who's got a, you know, anybody really who wants them, I guess. But I think the idea is that the rollout of these goes into every home and this will be free. I mean, we are paying for it essentially through our electricity bills, through our energy bills.
Yep.
But yeah, the hardware is free. But the key thing is, And this is the key bit of information that I have to keep beating this drum on, because it's so important people do this. If you want one of these, you have to explain to your provider that you are visually impaired or that you're blind and that you need this, because they won't just give you one of these. One of the things that RNIB is pushing for, and I hope I'm not telling tales out of school here when I say this, but one of the things that RNIB is really pushing for is that all of these devices have got this accessibility built into them. That makes a lot of sense to me, because then you would have a situation where, you know, all of these devices can just be enabled to be accessible rather than having to request a specific box that you get.
Yeah, and with volume of scale, I mean, it will cost more to put in the talking bit, but, you know, they're going to be rolling out hundreds of thousands of these. And so you would have thought that it could become the default, simply because managing separate requests for... I was interested to see in the clip there that it was saying that the non-talking version was also high-vis, which is good. But I would suspect that, you know, they'll have at least two versions of these smart displays now to have to manage and deal with people's requests. Like you just said a moment ago, you have to flag that you want the talking one. You'd have thought that that, just that management of the requests and the processing of, you know, getting the right one out to the right people would actually cost more than the additional hardware to just make it available for everybody. And that's, like you say, that's the ideal scenario. You want that to be available to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that it just makes no sense at all that you have to go through an additional process. I mean, you know, you think about, I think about my iPhone again, you know, and I think about, you know, the fact that accessibility is built into that phone. I don't have to go and buy a special, you know, go into the Apple store and say, hello, I'd like my special blind iPhone, please. And say, oh, you want one of those talking ones, do you? Right, hang on. Joe, give me one of those talking phones. You know, and then, you know, all that goes on from there. Don't need all that nonsense. It's just built in and it works. And that's kind of where we want to be. You're right, I am intrigued about the fact it's not online. One of the questions I did ask, and you can listen to more of that conversation on the Tech Talk podcast, but what I will say is that one of my concern about it was a couple of things. One is that it's with it not being internet connected, could you customize it? Because one of the things I think we've all become accustomed to as blind people is you can sort of customize your tech. Like, I like certain voices that I listen to using my iPhone and my iPad. Mm-hmm. You know, Ava.
It's got to be Ava everywhere.
It's got to be Ava. Everyone loves Ava, right? I've even downloaded Ava. I had to buy Ava for my Android phone. I'm not even going to go there. Like, that's just annoyed me beyond belief. And get it for free on an iPhone, but I've got to pay for it on an Android. Ava clearly isn't a fan. But yeah, so, you know, I've got that option. I can choose which speed I want it at. Obviously, as you become more used to speech technology, the speed does tend to go up, because you tend to think, well, I could listen to this a lot quicker. And that's often why you hear blind people, you know, with the jaws or whatever in their ear, and it's, you know, it's going at a million miles an hour. But that's because we're getting used to it, so we can hear it, we can pick out the bits we need. You can't do any of this on an accessible in-home display.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no customization on it.
They mentioned there that they, you know, from feedback, speeded up the voice. And I can only imagine what we heard there was the speeded up voice. But I actually would like to have the option, like you say, of making that faster still. It's probably worth mentioning, just to reiterate, you need a smart meter in your home that measures your gas and electricity, and that has the kind of connectivity to this smart home display. We don't have that in our home, so we would need to wait until we were smartened up in that department. And obviously this is separate from water, which have their own smart displays, meters that actually measure water. Again, we don't have one of those, and I'm rather reluctant for them to come and say we need one, because I suspect that our water bills will go up. We try our best, but, you know, with children in the house, etc. So yeah, this isn't connected to the water supply at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole different thing. I didn't even know that was a thing, because I live in Scotland, where water, of course, just, you know, comes off angels' backs
out the sky
into my house. Yeah, exactly. It just pours. Yeah, it just comes out the sky into my house. So we have plenty of water. No, we don't have that issue. I don't know how it works in Scotland. I'll be honest, my wife deals with the bills. I like it that way. But here's the thing. I think it's a really interesting piece of tech, and I'm really glad that they've come round to this. I do wish, and I know like R&IB does, that, you know, they could actually build this into every single device. It would probably be cheaper overall, like you say, and I think it would make a lot more sense. But in the meantime, this is where we are. And the key things, the key takeaways from this is that you have to get in touch with your supplier. You have to tell them that you are visually impaired or blind and that you need this. And, you know, what we're starting to hear, and I'll be really interested in your feedback on this, but we've started to hear from people in the last few months who are saying, got in touch with the supplier, they actually know what I'm talking about now. Because for a long time, you would call up and ask for the accessible in-home smart display and they would say, no idea what that is. And you were left. What do you do? And, you know, no matter how many times someone from R&IB would tell me, oh, but the company should just know. Well, they obviously don't. So that was a challenge. That is changing, though. So that's good news. So if you are looking to do this, if you are looking to get one of these, and you will, as Robin says, you have to be, you have to have the smart meter put into your house. But in order to make sure you get the right display, get in contact with your provider and tell us how you get on. Really, really be interested to know. But I think it's a good idea to do it now. I said this to my wife the other day. I said, I think we should probably call them up now and get this in situ, because it means that then when they come out with the device, they've got it marked down that you need this, rather than getting something you can't use and then you've got to get it changed and all the hassle that goes along with that. So, I think it's good news.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we're going to hear more about that, no doubt, in the next few weeks. Do get in touch and tell us your thoughts. I just want to take a slight tangent for a second, because I did mention it there. Ava costs £3.89 on the, through the Vocalizer Expressive app, which is available for Android. So basically, if I want to get... This enraged me this week.
Bite the bullet.
I did. I actually spent £3.86 to get a voice from my phone. I was actually appalled.
They were about £200 for Windows before they were bundled with JAWS, for example, by default. So, yeah, come down a bit.
But what, I get that, you know, these things take a lot of work and they, you know, but it's available on every other platform though. Why do I have to pay for it on Android? I can get it on a Mac, on a Windows PC, I can get it on my iPad, I can get it on my iPhone. I can get it onto my Samsung phone, but I've got to pay for it. And I just find that really strange.
Yep.
Anyway, and I know spending money is not a thing I like to do. So, you know, that's part of it. Okay, that is part of it. But still, anyway, right, I'm not going to rant. I promised, I said I wasn't going to rant this week. But, you know, there we go. Didn't last very long. Shall we do some news?
News from the internet.
Oh, so much news. And we start with the internet itself. And some good news, actually, because the government have finally decided, and I think it's about time, we'll talk about this in a minute, but I think it's probably about time that the government stepped in to control and regulate, to some degree, the internet. This will probably not be the most popular thing in the world. I kind of think it is a positive thing. You can tell us your thoughts on it. But first, here's Andrew Wynne with the details of this late story.
The government today unveiled tough new measures to ensure the UK is the safest place in the world to be online. In the first online safety laws of their kind, social media companies and tech firms will be legally required to protect their users and face tough penalties if they do not comply. As part of the Online Harms White Paper, a joint proposal by the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport and the Home Office, a new independent regulator will be introduced to ensure companies meet their responsibilities. This has been welcomed by a national children's charity, the NSPCC. Its head of Child Safety Online, Tony Stower, says it is about time this happened.
This is a crucial time for keeping children safe online. The government has got a fantastic opportunity with the publication of its white paper to set out legislative steps that will force the internet companies to recognise their duty of care to children and to take steps to keep children safe. We've had 10 years of the internet industry regulating itself and taking no real steps forward in the protection of children online. We know that children love the internet and continue to use it to have fun and to make friends. but they continue to be exposed to unacceptable risks online from groomers, from unacceptable content and others. That's why the government needs to force the companies, because they just won't fix this on their own.
The new proposed laws will apply to any company that allows users to share or discover user-generated content or interact with each other online. This means a wide range of companies of all sizes are in scope, including social media platforms, file hosting sites, public discussion forums, messaging services, and search engines. Martha Lane Fox from the research group Dot Everyone says that this needs to change urgently.
I think we need a new structure in order to help us manage the situation that we find ourselves in with technology. Dot Everyone, my think tank, did some research that showed that while people think that the internet has helped them at an individual level, 50% of people say that every day the internet has made their lives better, only 12% think it has made society better. So I think we need a new office. We're calling it the Office for Responsible Technology. And I think it can do a couple of things. It can help regulators understand the internet. You know, this idea that you can regulate the internet is quite complicated, and I would argue that rather than trying to blanket bomb regulation across all sectors, it might be better to try and help people who are looking at the advertising market or the financial markets or the political, you know, electoral commission or the Competition and Markets Authority to understand the internet better, so that where it touches their sector, they can raise their game and do effective regulation, as opposed to trying to regulate the internet, which is a bit like saying, let's regulate air. It's kind of impossible. So that's the first thing we think this place should do. The second thing we think it should do is help people, individuals, understand what their rights are and have a place to go for redress.
Well, of course, as Andrew says there, you know, there are a number of organisations that are taking this very seriously and, of course, are welcoming this news, but none more so than Bonnie Meller, whose daughter, Lani, committed suicide at the age of 16 after visiting several suicide chat rooms.
She had some friends at school, but she had struggled with a couple of friendships, which had left her quite socially anxious, which I think in turn made her afraid to invest in further relationships. And because of that, she tended to spend more time with online friends than she did with friends in real life.
Yeah,
I don't doubt for a minute it was a comfort to her. And she did have some nice friendships with a group online who she'd been in contact with for around 2.5 years. So there was certainly a side to it, but I was grateful that she had some friends and she had people to communicate with. So yeah, there was, you know, absolutely that side to it. I don't know at what point she started looking for these things. I think her first searches began around the beginning of the new school year of year 11, as the academic pressure was mounting and she was starting to feel worried about her future. I think she started looking into various things then, but I think as her mental state broke down, particularly up to 2 months before she died, at that point she was starting to search for other things and maybe search for support, finding the wrong kind in the wrong places and wondering what was wrong with her, wanting to find answers to how she was feeling. So
you say she found the wrong thing, so what's can you give any examples of
maybe just discussion threads on suicide, where other users were perhaps talking about methods. She was on self-harm forums, wherever they may have been, all of which content would have been normalising her view of these subjects.
Yeah.
And just discussion with friends as well, I suppose.
And the other thing is the normalisation.
The normalisation, absolutely. The acronyms, the language, there's so much discussion around it. You wouldn't ordinarily be in contact with these numbers of people who are all feeling depressed, who are feeling suicidal, who are discussing these things. Absolutely, it's normalised. And at this point, our children are on a precipice. They're needing someone, they're looking for something, and they need someone to come and grab them and pull them back. And what is happening by seeing this, getting this information and seeing this imagery online, it's giving them the push. And that's the problem.
That's what you feel happened to Lani.
I do.
I mean, obviously, that's a horrific story, Robin. And, you know, it's one when you think about it that, you know, the reality of and the danger of these websites, you know, in and of themselves being fairly innocuous, you know, actually giving someone, in you know, Bonnie's daughter's case, that push to do something horrific like that, and no one there to stand in the way and say, look, this is wrong, and no one could step in. You know, this is the challenge with the internet where we are in 2019, that with it being unregulated, there is very little control. But the question is, can it actually be regulated? Because I hear what Bonnie says, but can this be regulated? Can we stop chat rooms like that?
Well, I think the most prime suspects are social media, and there are, you know, top Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, etc., that are the places to go for people of this age. And I think there's a very strong consensus now that these people, these platforms, should take responsibility. And that, I think, is what this white paper is all about. Now, it will take resources, it will take manpower to be more involved in making sure that those kinds of vicious cycles don't exist. At the moment, there hasn't been that recognition within these platforms. In fact, their very existence, which is to allow people to share content and for every single user to have more of the same of what they're interested in. You know, that's their bread and butter. That's the lifeblood. If you search for a particular thing, then you're going to get more of that. And that's the way that they've been coded. So that obviously works both ways when you're looking at this kind of content. And there has been very little acceptance until very recently. Mark Zuckerberg in particular is a notable case where they, you know, he said, yep, hands up, Facebook are definitely going to do much more in a proactive way here, because up until now, the algorithms that they've been using have been driving people towards these extreme niche areas where it is normalised, whether it's self-harm and suicide or radicalisation or whatever extreme beliefs. You know, if you have those and you express them even in a mild way online, then before you know, you're driven into those areas where you get more and more and more of what you're, you know, it pushes you to those extremes. So absolutely, this is well overdue.
And it doesn't have to be even as serious as that. I mean, I've seen situations and examples where, you know, nowadays children can access tablets, for example, that are built, I think Amazon do one, there's a Fire tablet for kids. So, you know, it blocks out a lot of the content that, you know, we wouldn't want our children to see. Of course, Apple have brought in screen time as well, which is for everybody, so we can all, you know, keep an eye on our screen time and how much we use our phones to try and live more healthy, happy lives, as opposed to being constantly attached to our phones. So even in small ways, changes are being made. And of course, and that can lead to the bigger problems maybe being resolved. But what's being said, suggested here, is that it really does take a law to do this. Now, it's interesting because if I put this next to my arguments towards audio description, and I've said for a long time, unless we legislate here, there will never be an improvement in audio description and the numbers, especially for things like on demand. We saw it with television. When there was legislation brought in, the number of audio described programs jumped. When, you know, there was no regulation or any kind of legislation around on demand television, well, there was very little on demand that was available with audio description. There's a new law coming in, and it's likely that will change. And that's great for us, and that's brilliant. So it kind of proves that legislation is needed, doesn't it? To make something happen, in order to get the companies to move on it, to spend the money, to you know, put those resources in, like you're saying, they need to be forced.
I completely agree. And let's hope that that EU directive, which has been embodied now in UK legislation around public sector accessibility, will mean that we'll get more audio description more consistently across our different platforms. Going back to online safety, our children are very savvy and very, you know, digitally able. And some people might think, well, you know, know about social media, and they're going to be able to be more aware of these things. Certainly our children talk about, you know, art seem to be very savvy and conscious about the dangers. The other angle to that, though, the flip side of that coin, is that they're actually on it loads more than older generations. Mm, so, yeah. You know, you've got the sheer exposure element to it as well. And a lot of the people and organisations that kind of that you would come across can seem very credulous. They can seem very plausible, very believable. So, you know, however savvy you are, I think that even though it might be really difficult to regulate the air, as Martha was saying there, they have to try, because it really needs to come from both ends.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because from my point of view, growing up, there was no such thing as social networks. They didn't exist. I mean, a social network was meeting your friends in the park. You know, that was the kind of social network. But now, with it all being online, I don't think we fully grasp the importance to the young people of this. This is the bit that I don't think we've quite grasped as adults. I know that adults can get a bit obsessive about it as well, and can, you know, but I don't know. I think it's a different thing growing up within it, right? I mean, it'd be like growing up without television in my, you know, when I think about it from that point of view. You know, the idea of not having a television would be like, what, really? And kids now grow up with the idea of, well, what was life like without this? We could never imagine, because they are glued to these things. I mean, you've got kids, you get this.
Absolutely. They are on it all the time. Not constantly, because, you know, they're doing their homework and they're doing other things, but frequently and intermittently. And they tend to send each other messages that are very, very short. So rather than typing out a whole message, they'll just send back and forward a constant stream of short messages. And so you're always kind of being, it's like Pavlov's dog, you know, when you hear the bell go, you have to pick up your phone. And I think you just get conditioned, and there is an expectation amongst people of that age that when you send a message to someone, they won't wait until the next morning to reply. They'll always be available. And that's a tough, you know, that's a high pressure situation for young people to be in, where they feel like they need to stay on top of all the messaging that's going around and reply to it. So it is a challenge, definitely.
Okay, let's talk about something else that's in the news this week, and it intrigues me because it's a story that I am just obsessed by anyway. Driverless cars. Robin, you've been spotting a story about the rise of autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, there's a couple of stories this week. One was some disquiet on the internet and in the press when it was discovered that in these new Tesla cars, the Model 3, which is the affordable version, $35,000.
Affordable, yeah. Right.
Take two.
Okay.
Where there was a camera inside the cabin, you know, inside the car, pointing at the people. And why, you know, why is this here? What purpose does it serve? And the owner of Tesla, Elon Musk, PayPal founder, and SpaceX, and, well, a lot of other companies, acknowledged that it's there. It's not kind of being used at the moment, but along with a number of other hardware features that aren't turned on yet, every single Model 3 car has all the hardware required for full autonomous driving. And that's what it's there for. I guess it's to look at the driver to see whether he's distracted or falling asleep, that sort of thing. But anyway, the big story angle here is that there will be tens of thousands of cars on the streets that are fully capable of autonomous, you know, full autonomous driving, as and when the law, the regulations allow it, and then they can flip a switch and there'll be a firmware update or whatever it might be. So it just, you know, we are very, very close. The hardware is there, the AI, the kind of smarts that can deal with most situations on a daily basis are really very well advanced now. And there's been tens of millions of road miles driven by these cars, not without event, but certainly without nearly as much loss of life or injury as there would be if the humans were driving. So we're definitely getting there. And then the second story, which made me smile, was it was a TechCrunch article. They wrote about this exercise that these autonomous vehicle developing companies were doing, where they had a racetrack and they had a professional racing car driver and they had an autonomous vehicle. And the idea was to try and test autonomous driving to the very limit. So they're really quite good at dealing with everyday situations, you know, everyday driving around town, the obstacles, the hazards, the situations that might come up. But what happens when cars are pushed to an extreme, in an extreme situation, like if they have to sort of suddenly accelerate and swerve at the very limits of their driving capability? So that's what they wanted to investigate with this particular research project. So, yep, they had this autonomous driver and the racing car human. They didn't do them head to head. They did them one after the other on the racing track. And unfortunately, the article doesn't say who won from a lap time point of view. I know. They were reporting what the research was about and they said that the research declined to give lap times. But they did say that both successfully navigated a very intense track at average 90 miles an hour. So average 90 miles an hour means that, you know, some for a lot of the time they're going to be somewhat faster than that, I'm sure, without incident. So it's interesting to see that, you know, with the Tesla story where it's good to go, guys, let's just wait until the lawmakers decide it's okay and then we'll press the button. And then this one where they're really exploring the very outer limits of the capabilities of these AI systems that will be driving our cars in the not too distant future. So yeah, two really interesting stories that show that driverless cars, you know, they're coming.
Yeah, I mean, well, do you know, I would even go so far to say, and I'd be right now because you've just proven it, that they're already here. You know, they're just, they're parked in people's driveways at the moment. And that is where things get really, really interesting. I think it comes back to that point, though. The thing I saw on the news, where was it? Maybe a few months back now, where the suggestion is that in legislation, there will not be a requirement in the UK. There will not be a requirement for someone to be a driver at the wheel.
Yep.
And that is because, I imagine, although we think it's all about us as blind people, I don't think it will be. Actually, I think it's more to do with the fact that that allows taxi services, like your Uber, for example, to provide taxi services where a driverless car can turn up and take you where you want to go. And I think that's where it's going to go. I think that's where we'll start to see it move from being, I think we'll move from being car owners to car users, essentially.
Yeah, or owners of a small taxi company, maybe even if it's just a one car taxi company, because you're absolutely right. One aspect of that story about Elon Musk's admission was that it is so that they can be Uber vehicles. He actually called out Uber there as being, you know, ready to be an autonomous taxi service. And I agree, none of this autonomous stuff is for us. It's for mainstream tech to solve the congestion problem. Because if you're using a car, a driverless vehicle, 100% of the time, rather than 5% of the time, which is the average for your privately owned vehicle at the moment, then you have far fewer cars to deal with, where, you know, parking or trying to get from A to B with just one person. And for example, we're going to see much smarter varieties of cars with software that can work out the best route to take people on and drop them off so that they maximize capacity of each vehicle in the most efficient routes possible, etc. And so people minimize their price of the ride because they're maximizing the number of people that they're taking on, and yet you'll still be dropped outside the door to where you want to go. This is a completely different world that we're going to be experiencing, you know, 5 years, 10 years, definitely 15.
The future looks amazing. I like the sound of the future. Yeah, it's going to be really, really exciting. Driverless cars, of course, making it into the news again this week. No great surprise. But we move on because here on Tech Talk, we like to tell you about interesting developments in apps or in areas of tech. And you know, one thing we really wanted to do with our new Tech Talk here was talk more about what you can do with tech, not just the tech itself. So here's one that Robin is going to tell us about now. If you like emojis, I, by the way, spoiler alert, hate them. But if you like, but actually, there's a reason why I hate them. It's because I can never work out which emoji I should be using. And that is why I'm taking great interest in what Robin is about to talk about.
I would like to demonstrate a fantastic utility for the Mac. Rocket, it's free, although you can pay for certain upgrades, but I'm going to show you what you get for free, and it's brilliant. I've been working with the developer Matthew Palmer, and he's been super keen to make sure it's accessible. Before now, the options that it brought up when you want to insert emoji, which is, by the way, what this is all about, easily, quickly inserting emojis into anywhere that you can type. The options didn't used to speak, but they do now. So he was super helpful there. And he's in fact added in a whole extra tab for accessibility in the preferences pane, which we'll look at in a moment. But I'm just going to show you. I'm in the Mac here. I'm in
Notes, three running applications.
I'm in Notes. Let's create a new note with Command N.
New note, edit text.
New note, edit text. And now, if I start typing, I'll tell you what I'm typing because I haven't got key repeat on. I'm typing colon R.
Happy man raising one hand.
O.
Man throwing the boat. System has a new window.
C. Rocket. Oh, and you probably heard there that it was giving me matches based upon the letters that I'm typing. So I typed colon and straight away afterwards I typed R-O-C and it's brought me to rocket. So if I wanted to put an emoji of a rocket in there, I just hit enter.
Paste.
It said it's pasted it in. If I arrow back to the left.
Rocket.
There it is.
Rocket.
I'll arrow to the right again. I'll put a space. Let's type something else. Colon B-A-L-L.
Man dribbling a basketball. System
man
has a new
window. Dribbling a basketball. Let's arrow down.
Woman dribbling a basketball.
Woman dribbling a basketball.
Rice ball.
Rice ball.
Crystal ball.
Crystal. Oh, let's try that one. I'll hit enter there.
Ball. Paste.
It's pasted that in. Let's try something else. Colon OK.
Man with hands clasped above his head making the OK gesture. System has a new window.
Man with hands clasped above his head doing the OK gesture. For arrow down.
Woman with hands clasped above her head making the OK gesture.
Woman.
OK hand.
OK hand. Let's do that one.
Ball. Paste.
Let's do one more. Colon P.
Man staring straight ahead.
O.
Man staring straight ahead.
O.
Smiling pile of poo.
Smiling pile of poo. Let's hit enter.
Paste.
So now, if I arrow back.
Smiling pile of poo. Okay hand. Crystal ball. Rocket.
So as you can see, we've typed in a number of emojis very, very easily. And whichever the last one was will remain on your clipboard. So if you wanted to use that again, then you could just paste it from your clipboard. Let's have a quick look in the menu.
Menu bar.
To
Apple.
See.
Menu extras. Rocket. Menu extra.
So it's in the extras menu. I'll hit VO space on that.
Rocket menu.
Arrow down.
Browse and search ellipses. Fun stats ellipses. Emoji bullet list ellipses. Preferences ellipses.
Let's go into preferences.
Preferences. Window. General. Selected. Tab. 1 of 3.
In here, if I tab.
Launch. Start rocket. Login. Tick. Checkbox.
You want to do that.
Theme. System. Pop-up button.
That's the color theme.
Trigger key.
Trigger key.
Colon. Content selected.
So we've been using colon. It's whatever you want to type, followed by the string straight away afterwards.
Help button. Skin tone. Thumbs up. Selected. Radio button.
And in here, you can choose your skin tone. So if you've got medium, light, dark skin tone.
Thumbs up with light skin tone. Radio button. Thumbs up with medium, light skin tone. Radio button. Thumbs up with medium skin tone. Radio button. Thumbs up with medium, dark skin tone. Radio button. Thumbs up with dark skin tone. Radio button.
And then you won't be asked again. Those will give you your default ones, and you can go in there and change them if you want to.
Disable Rocket within these apps. Table.
You can disable Rocket within certain apps, like Slack, for example, because they have their own very similar ways of doing it. But if you don't want to, you can use this way instead. If I do lots of arrows to the right.
Add button. Remove button. Close button. Minimize button. Full screen button. Preferences. General. Selected. Tab. Advanced. Tab. 2 of 3. Accessibility. Tab. 3 of 3.
This is the new tab, accessibility, and I wanted to show you in here.
Tab accessibility. Rocket is proud to be the first emoji picker for blind people.
Rocket's proud to be the first emoji picker for blind people.
Configure Rocket's accessibility settings here. Speech rate.
So you can change the speech rate.
Fast. Pop-up button.
Fast is how I've got it set. That's what the list of emojis sound like when you arrow up and down through them.
Clipboard.
Clipboard.
Put the selected emoji on the clipboard. Tick. Checkbox.
Now that might be super useful just because you might have a favourite one that you might want to use several times. So you can obviously use this wherever you can type. So you could use it in messages, in the messages app on your Mac to send people iMessages with emoji. You can use it in any text document at all. And with continuity, which we all know about, I'm sure, you could type anything on your Mac, including any emojis, and then you could copy it to the clipboard and it'll be available on the clipboard on your iPhone, for example, or iPad, to be able to paste into those two. Brilliant. Thank you, Matthew. If you want to check out Rocket, it's free. If you go to matthewpalmer.net/rocket. Brilliant.
Thank you for that, Rob. That is brilliant. Love it.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
And yes, it is time for email once again, Robin. Now, look, before we get into the emails, first of all, let's say hello to producer Andy, who I think is over there somewhere. Hello, producer Andy.
Oh, hello. Hello. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good.
Hey, Andy.
Robin. Hello. How are you?
You're really good.
Now, I want to, just before we get into the emails, mention a couple that we're not going to read out because they didn't come to us directly. But we did get a couple of emails about the speed of your voice that you use on your phone or your computer, Robin, for the demonstrations.
Which leads on very nicely from the piece that we've just heard, because I need to apologise. Obviously, these correspondence came in after I'd recorded that chunk, and I have to put my hands up after a couple of other demos that we're going to hear in a couple of, you know, in the upcoming episodes. So apologies in advance for not slowing down the speech on those. But yep, taken on board. Absolutely agree. I will slow things down in the future.
Do you know, I'm the same. I just, you kind of just imagine everybody else is listening at that speed, but of course they're not. So anyway, yeah, we will solve that problem. And yeah, I'll be very mindful of it as well. Anyway, let's get into the emails then. Andy, what's first up?
I won't be at double speed today.
I'll just go normal speed. Not normal drone that you've got.
Oi, careful now. So the first email is from Louise. She says, "Hi, Tech Talkers. Really enjoying the show, discussions, interviews and features. Keep up the good work. I wondered if you or any of your many listeners could give me some wireless headphone suggestions. I have a desktop computer running Windows and I want to be able to use it whilst at the other side of the room we use my Bluetooth keyboard. Does anyone have any suggestions regarding a Bluetooth headphone and microphone combination which would work without lag? I did buy a cheap pair of Bluetooth headphones, but the lag was terrible. Also, every time I used Jaws, Jaws would stop speaking and I pressed a key and the headphones would have powered down to save battery and it would take a few seconds to power up again, which meant the first part of the speech was always cut off. Any suggestions would be gratefully received." That's from Louise.
Well, I think obviously, Louise, first of all, thank you for your lovely email and your lovely comments. But I think the obvious thing here to say, Robin, is buy a Mac.
Well, I can completely agree with that experience where I think we've all bought cheap Bluetooth earbuds, headsets, etc., where the first part of anything is chopped off. If there's been a few seconds delay since you last, you know, swiped on your iPhone or on your computer and the things have powered down. So, yeah, anything that is super cheap won't be viable for use with anything other than just, you know, listening to podcasts or something where you can just have to put up with the couple of second delay. So, yeah, certainly a Mac with AirPods, for example, the higher end Bluetooth headsets or ear pods, you know, that you can just pop in your ears, are much quicker at pairing, at the delay from when you press a key or swipe on the screen and it starts to speak. There's some cleverness done between the Mac and iOS devices and the Apple AirPods, particularly the new ones that came out a couple of weeks ago, that are going to represent the best that you can possibly get in this scenario. I can't help thinking, though, that on a Windows machine, and I haven't tested this, so apologies if this isn't the case, that most of the cleverness is in the AirPods, for example, rather than the machine that it's connecting with. So it might not be as quick as if you were connecting to a Mac, for example, but I reckon it would be the best that you could possibly get. So try using Jaws with AirPods. I know they're not cheap, but that would be my recommendation. Just as a data point, people probably know that I use a virtual machine on my Mac. So I have Windows running on here as well, and I have JAWS running in that. And I know that it's a Mac at the end of the day, but the responsiveness when I am arrowing around and typing, etc., with JAWS in that virtual machine with AirPods is almost instantaneous. It's definitely doable.
I'm more intrigued at this pinging that's going on in the background here.
Sorry.
It sounds like you're getting a prize or some kind of award every time. It's like a game show. Are you on Price is Right or something over there?
Apple Watch.
Not Apple Watch.
Sorry, guys.
What is with these Apple Watches? Mine does this all the time. It pings away. And when I hit on the screen to tell me what it's saying, it doesn't say anything.
Yeah, so if you have done something with your wrist in the meantime that made it look like, well, made it wake up, basically. So if you hear a ping or an alert like that, if you raise your wrist without doing any other jiggling in advance, then it will show you that. If you've jiggled it in the meantime and it woke up, however, instantaneously, then it gets demoted to your notification center. So yeah, it's like,
stop jiggling.
Yeah, it's like a bomb, you know, you mustn't jostle it, otherwise you'll not see the message.
Exactly. Well, just on that point, right, because it's interesting what you say about the AirPods. I mean, I don't think we're suggesting, Louise, you should go and get a Mac, because that would be ridiculous. But yeah, I think it is all to do with the cheapness of the Bluetooth headphones.
Definitely.
I bought a pair of Logitech headphones. Now, I will go and try and find this out for you, what the actual model number was. But truth be told, I bought them from a large PC store, which apparently is the size of the Earth. If that's not cryptic enough for you, please email in. I just picked them up. They were £45, Logitech headphones, kind of just a standard pair of headphones with a little microphone in them for Skype. That was essentially what I bought them for. They come with a little USB connector, which, so the headphones are wireless, but the little connector plugs into your computer and then it beams the sound to your headphones. And I haven't noticed much lag on those. And it is interesting because I've tried Bluetooth before and found it quite annoying. So maybe that's a way around it. Maybe one of those types of devices. This was about £45, made by Logitech. It was a Skype headset. Price, of course, will have changed, no doubt. But that might give you an indication as to where to go. But try things out. You know, if you buy something on Amazon or you go to one of these big stores, you can take them back if it doesn't work for you. So it might be worth trying a couple of pairs, because this is a unique problem to us as blind people, because most people might be annoyed by the couple of seconds when you hit play on a piece of music and, you know, then it takes a second or two to start. But ultimately, once it starts, who cares? Whereas we have this problem continuing all the time. But hopefully you get it resolved, and we will endeavour to help you more with that. And I'm sure our listeners will too. Andy, what else is in the list?
So this second email for the show is from Bal. He says, "Hi guys, listening to your article about accessibility, I've noticed that the emails I receive for many organisations nowadays are using table format. As a voiceover user, I find that voiceover describing to me columns and row before it gets to the actual article is very annoying and very distracting. A prime example of this is the BBC. I've logged an issue with their complaints department and have responded to say that they will be bringing it to their, you know, the forefront of their attention. No timescales have been given. It didn't used to be an issue before," says Bal.
Well, there we go. Yeah, I think it is a problem. But I think, is that not to do, Robin, with HTML emails versus plain text emails?
Absolutely. And he'll experience exactly the same thing on a web page every time you go into a table. So the least verbose you can make voiceover on the Mac is that when you enter into a table, it will say entering table 3 columns by 5 rows. And then as you move around within those cells, those rows and columns, it's silent. So that's the minimum. And I think that Bal's saying that, yeah, he really doesn't like whenever you move into a table, you get that little summary about how many columns and rows. If people are getting more verbiage than that as you move around, then you can reduce that to just the column and row summary as you go in, and that would be in the voiceover settings. If you then go to web and then it's the navigation tab within the web page of the settings, then you can turn off speak column and row numbers. That's the tick box you want to untick there, guys. I don't think Bell's saying that, otherwise he would have been even more annoyed. But yeah, unfortunately, and let's hope that in future updates to the Mac, I think VoiceOver only gets updated when the operating system does every year, that we'll get a bit more intelligence there. JAWS for some time now, with tables that are used for kind of layout purposes, it does some clever calculations and decides, oh, this table's not for data. It's being used to kind of lay out a page or an HTML email, and it doesn't report anything to do with tables on that web page or that email. So it's a bit cleverer than VoiceOver. Let's hope we get that cleverness coming to the Mac.
Okay, just a quick one there because we've only got a minute or so left. Let's go to Tony, who emailed in with a question for you, Robin.
He says, I listened to your article about Lyre RSS feeds. I've bought the app on iTunes, but I can't get any further on how to do a search or which provider to use. Can you help? From Tony.
This is Leary, isn't it? The app that you were referring to last week.
Yeah, so if you go to subscribe on the main page, tap on that, then in there, that's where you can search. There's an add button, and then you've got a search box, and you can put in BBC, TechCrunch, Amazonian Tree Frog, accessibility, whatever it is you want to put in there, and it'll either go away and pull back publications based on, you know, the TechCrunch search term, for example, all the articles from TechCrunch, or on that have those specific keywords in there, like accessibility.
Okay, well, that is it for us for this week. I hope that answered your questions. Thank you to Louise, thank you to Bal, and also thank you to Tony as well for sending in your emails. We have got lots more to get to, including, by the way, I know every week we say we're going to get to this. We've got an audio comment from Damien. Damien, I promise you it will be in next week's show. But we just always run out of time because we talk tech too much. But hey, I think that's what we're here for, so that's okay. Robin, thank you so much for being with me again.
A pleasure. Thanks both.
And Andy, thank you.
Thank you very much. See you next week.
Catch you next time on Tech Talk.
Thanks for listening to Tech Talk. Don't forget to check out and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for more great interviews and stories about technology for blind people. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk. See you next time.